afternoon. I'm Mike Duff. I work with Homepage News, which is the news site affiliated with the IHA. And I'm here to introduce Tom Mirabile. This is the seminar, Learning to Listen, Satisfying the Insatiable Consumer. And Tom is going, he's the principal and founder of Springboard Futures, and he's going to tap into the new 2024 Value Equation Index to provide some guidance in how to deal with kaleidoscopic changes in consumer demand, desires, and expectations. We want to maximize experience with minimal effort, and Tom is going to provide us with insights that's going to help people applying some of these principles to dealing with the consumer in the changing market. Just one thing, the audio and deck will be available on the IHA website in a couple of weeks, so there'll be a lot to go through, but you can pick that up and get more of the detail at that time. But as for this, Tom.
You'll pardon me, I have laryngitis, so it may go in and out a little bit, but we'll try to keep it stable. So the idea behind an index in general is to look year on year. Oh, yeah, gotta turn it on, that might help.
Okay.
Better? How's that? Okay, that's better. The idea behind an index is really to sort of look year on year and say, okay, what's the difference between, you know, are these things staying the same? Are these, you know, and I think this is one year where having an index is really going to be a benefit because there's some real shifts. But let me tell you a little bit about why we created the Consumer Value Equation Index. We start off by looking at the fact that the landscape of consumers is a blended one. Okay, so we wanted to sort of start you all off with just that fundamental understanding of where we are today. You know, where is Gen Z? What percent of the population are they? What is their average household spending? You know, how many of them own a home versus renting? And then compare those with other generations. So we're not going to drill down to it in detail, but it's important to understand some of the basic tenets of each generation's position. So when you look at Gen Z, right now, they don't have, you know, they have a surprising number of them own a home. And a lot of that has to do with the pandemic and the fact that they were enabled to do that during that period. But understand that there are a lot of companies right now who will show you surveys, and some great companies, Pew Research is one of them, and they'll say, you know what, there's been so much cross-generational influence that we really don't want to look at things by generations anymore. And it's gotten so much so that we're really seeing a drift away from generational relevance and variance in analysis. We really believe that generational relevance is very important. And we see that. We've drilled into some of it in this survey. But Gen Z has a tremendous amount of influence, and they don't necessarily have a tremendous amount of the finance, whereas boomers have a tremendous amount of the money. They don't have, you know, their influence is on the wane. But when we look across these generations, it's interesting to sort of see where, you know, there's a lot of leveling out of population happening. When we look at average household spending, there's been, boomers are staying strong, but there's been a lot of leveling out across other generations. And the percent who own a home and rent a home, it's important to look at that because when we look at people who rent a home, they tend to spend more on experiential things. People who own a home tend to try to improve that property, put money into a new, into things that will keep the value of that property up. And so it's less goes into our industries. How they're defined, you know, each generation is defined by different things, and that affects the way that they spend money. There's been a lot of talk about sort of recasting Gen Z into almost a recession type of mindset because they are much more concerned about money, even though they don't have it yet, than a lot of other generations. They've gone through a lot that makes finance seem unstable. And also, what they're known for, they're sort of the way they evolve down here, it also affects the way that they spend. So it's interesting to keep that in mind as we look through this. The Value Equation Index was created, the mission of it is to identify and examine the key elements of the consumer value equation. So the value equation is what makes you buy. You know, it's what are the things that you consider when you look at buying a product. And it is a collaboration between Project Partners Network, Leanne Schwarzkopf is actually here, Michelle Lamb, and I believe Michelle is also here, and myself. And what we wanted to do was we wanted to create a survey. You know, you can go out there and you can see surveys and they'll say that it is about the value of material or the value of quality or the value of durability and all of these things. We wanted to say, okay, let's just get it all in one place. And moreover, let's look at it for home and housewares consumers. So what we did was we took a, it's a national sample. Margin of error is about 3% or less. We completed it just 3 weeks ago. So we've been crunching these numbers right up to the last minute. Since female purchasers and housewares are much more a part of that, we've balanced it so that it is about 65% female because that's the reality. But aside from that, we went with census balancing. So the percent of the of each of these, you know, the percentage of each of the generations is related to the census. And it wasn't just random. We also targeted the household purchasers, home and housewares purchasers, and we filtered out low influences. So to get into the survey, you had to be a primary influencer, a primary purchase maker, decision maker in your home, or a primary plus, like I am a primary or secondary decision maker. Anybody who said that they were partial or none at all didn't you know, they got kicked out of the survey. Because we felt like it was important to understand this consumer a little bit deeper level. We've also sliced it up by gender and age, and so you know there's a lot to talk about. But you know, a lot of that, if you want to see more of it, you can also contact us. So, what creates value? When we look at the value equation, it's much more nuanced than it used to be. So, when people decide to buy something in home or in housewares, what are they looking at? These are the things that they look at. These are all the considerations. And what we did was we said, let's look at each of them, and we're going to present several of them to you today, and find out what matters. You know, so when we look at the value of trust, what's interesting about trust is, so what you see as the description is what in survey, because we wanted people to have the same definition, we define trust. So we said in this survey, it refers to your sense that a retailer or a brand is credible, that they're reliable, authentic, that they're committed to delivering value to you. But when we look at trust, just to let you know, because there's so much sort of wondering about it, trust is really right now a sort of quatrefoil of reliability, so a reputation for dependable action, credibility, do you have the cred to make, you know, to be trustworthy? Do you have enough history in this that I trust you? Intimacy, which is something that's gotten a lot of importance now, it's a level of sincerity, humanity, and empathy that we expect from a retailer or a brand. And self-orientation, meaning, are they direct, is this person directed or company directed at their own profit, their own success, or are they directed at both of ours? Are they directed at mine? So when we look at that, we said, when you're choosing a retailer by those definitions or a brand, how important is trust? And what we saw was that 39% said it was very important, 24 said it was somewhat, 36 said it was extremely. This is a very high rating for very to extremely important. We had in extremely important last year was 22, now it's 36. So that's a raise of 64% of people say that trust is now extremely important. So we said, which of the following has the greatest impact on whether you put your trust in a retailer or a brand? Reputation. For reliability or durability, prior personal experience, recommendations from others, and you can see as the list goes down. Clearly, reputation for reliability and durability was paramount. Prior personal experience was also surprisingly high. Recommendations from others and prior personal experience, the two of those sort of gang together, are really telling you a lot about how much influence experience has in this and how we want to know that it's something we can touch, we can feel, and we've had personal experience with it. And longevity in the marketplace, surprisingly high, because it seems like it's only 27%, but that's something that has really fallen off across a lot of categories in recent years. The when we look at the reputation for reliability and durability, it really speaks to the fact that younger generations don't want to be buying for a landfill. We want our dollars to go faster or to go further. Reputation was 60 last year. Now it's at 65%, so that's up 8%. Personal experience was 48, now it's 52. So we've really seen a lot of these numbers on the left go up. To be, you know, hitting 8 and 10 points is very high. Recommendations from others was at 28, now it's 32, so that's up almost 20%. When we asked, when you're shopping for home or housewares products, how important are brands? This is a question that comes up across home and housewares constantly. Do brands have value? Where do they add value? When do they add value? We are seeing not only are they very to extremely important, you know, we have a nice, solid 51%, very to extremely, but extremely was 9.8, and now it's 22. So it went from under 10% to up 22%. It's up 124% over last year. The very was 26, now it's 28, so that went up 7%. Not important was 11.7, and now it's down at 7, so that's a drop of almost 40%. So we're really seeing brand becoming more important in housewares. So which of the following are most likely to influence what brands you choose, what matters in brand to you? And we broke that into five categories. So the first was brand reputation and status, for example, high quality. The second was confidence, choosing a brand that's connected with trusted experts. It could be a license, it could be a company, it could be, it doesn't have to be a person, but it can be something that says, these are people, could be a trusted professional, restaurant. And brand personality, characteristics like hardworking or fun or, you know, then often associated with a celebrity. A brand that delivers personal growth. I always use KitchenAid as an example here because brands can deliver through their content and through their presence sort of a way to make you feel like you can become more yourself. And then finally, a sense of community. So sometimes we like brands that let us share what we like with other people and with other people who like what we do. The big growth things here were personality was up 42%. Was 19 last year. Personal growth was up 50%. That went from 18 to 27%. And community was 15, and now it's 23, so that went up 53%. So it's interesting to see us, you know, reputation and status are important. They both were pretty much flat. But it's interesting to see how important personality and personal growth have become. So we wanted to dig in just a little to housewares, and I'll move through this pretty quickly, but we thought, okay, it's fine to say that brands are important in home and housewares, but does that change by categories when we look at categories? So we said, okay, for barbecuing and grilling equipment, varied extremely, added up to 53%, okay? With cookware and bakeware, brand was 65%, said very to extremely important. So we can see there that tools, yeah, it's important, but it's even more important with cookware and bakeware. It's about safety, it's about how long we're gonna have it, it's about durability. Food preparation products, 51% said the brand was very to extremely important. And this is the first time that we start seeing not important come up as like an issue. It's not a bad thing. It tells us that it's a great place to start new brands. It tells us that when people are buying something that's a lower price point, They don't necessarily have to have a brand associated with it. Then we look at pantryware, so you know, canisters, things like that. Now you see it jump again, not important, goes up. So opportunities for brands, opportunities for expansion for existing brands. And then 50% said sink accessories, cleaning supplies, and tools. This is an interesting category because we're seeing companies like Williams-Sonoma, brands like KitchenAid, really starting to put out some very nice, very expensive sinkware, brushes, racks, draining racks, things like that. And so we have seen this number go up. Small electrics, and again, this is a real thing about brands. So when we look at small electrics, 72% said brands are very too extremely important. And a part of that is when you're thinking about branding a product, if safety is involved, branding becomes more important. It gives you a sense of security. It gives you a sense that it's going to be safe. and that it's going to be durable and that you're going to stand behind it and it'll have, you know, the warranties that you need. Also, kitchen knives, blocks, and cutlery, 61% are very too extremely. I'm leaving out somewhat because it's kind of in the middle, but I find that when we look at very extremely, we get very extremely are the people who are going to buy. You know, they're the people who spend the money first, so it's good to look at them as a leader. Dinnerware and serving accessories. So 53%. Flatware and silverware, 51%. That was a surprise because silverware or flatware used to be a business where you wanted a brand. You wanted Toll, Wallace, whoever. Now you've got store brands that are doing such great product that they've taken share away from brands. And so it's a great, you know, when you see something like this, it's a great time to introduce a brand or to extend a brand that maybe isn't in this business. And then we look at drinkware. Drinkware, 57%. Entertaining accessories is probably the lowest. And both of these categories are really high on not important. And the reason is they're the fashion categories of housewares. Serveware, you know, you go out and it's like something you see great at Target. You don't really care who makes it. It's about what it looks like and what it does, not so much who made it. We don't, you know, there aren't really tastemakers in those categories. And finally, wellness products. Wellness products vary too extremely, 60%. As wellness continues to get more important, spread into different categories. You know, we're seeing this balancing where very extremely used to be really, really important because it was in more electric categories and things like that. Now we're seeing it level out. So back to the value equation, the value of quality. Quality, as defined, delivers reliable performance, safety, durability, desirable materials, properties, and aesthetics. When we look at this, clearly, durability and reliable performance are way at the top. They're ahead of everything else by double. And the reasons for that are really about, you know, it's about as the economy starts to get more difficult, we want things to hold their value more. We want things that we buy to be durable. We want their performance to be reliable. And frankly, again, it's that I'm not buying for the landfill type of thing. We really want things to sort of stay, to be with us for a while. The other attributes are pretty smooth. You know, they're pretty even across them. The big shifts here were really in ease of use, gained 24%. Safety went up 16%. And material composition went up 23%. Surprisingly, design aesthetics doubled. Last time, it was only 7%. We saw a real drop, and we didn't understand what was going on. But when you look at it, a lot of that has to do with pandemic. You know, when the pandemic came and all of a sudden, we didn't know whether we were going to have our jobs, how long we were going to have our jobs. The idea of design aesthetics kind of fell to the side. And there was the reason for that was in part because we wanted something that we could live with for a long time. And when you get further into design aesthetics, you get a little bit more edgy. You look at it as something that maybe doesn't have the same life as, you know, the same style life as something else. So it happened in furniture too. So which of these features, benefits, and design elements have the greatest influence on your purchase decision? Ease of use was number one across these categories at 57%. Multiple functions was number two, and that showed a gain of 14%. And then you can see the rest, warranties and support, color and style. But each one of these makes a part of that decision. And again, when, you know, if at some point any of you want to look at what the generational shifts on these were, there are generational variations in all of these. So you'll see that ease of use is much more important to Gen Z than it is to boomers. One of the biggest growths, although it's only at 17% here, was content. People are wanting more and more content. Video content, things to help them, give them ideas to use things that the brand provides, and also user-generated content. The value of price. Price is always tricky, you know, because you don't know. It's like, are people buying this at regular price? Are they waiting for a promotion? So what we decided to do was we asked consumers, what are your purchasing habits? Do you wait for a promotion? If I think there's going to be a promotional period at the end of the season, I'll wait and purchase it then. The second one was, I prefer options with free shipping and free returns, even if the item's price is slightly higher. Rebates and coupons. I regularly search my favorite retailers' brands for current rebates, coupons, promotions. Fair price. If the price seems fair, I don't spend a lot of time looking for promotions. And loyalty and rewards, which is, you know, I buy places and buy when I can get the most out of my rewards programs. And finally, updating via social. If a retailer brand is having a promotion, they're going to let me know on social media. So the big shifts here, a big shift in update via social. We're seeing there was an increase of about 30% of people saying that they expect to hear it on social media if one of their brands is going to have a promotion. That speaks not just to the promotional period, but also to the fact that direct-to-consumer selling is, that's where they're going to see that, you know, so because otherwise it'd be price fixing. And also another almost 20% growth in the number of people who said if the price is fair, they're just going to buy it now. And that's one of the reasons for that is because, I don't know if any of you have noticed, but post-pandemic, regular sales and things gone out the window. Nothing's regular anymore. Promotions are much more varied in terms of a calendar and even in terms of what you get. It's not just lower price. It may be free this or an add-on of that. The value of convenience is about how important is convenience to you? How important, how simple or seamless is the transaction? You know, what was it easier to find the product, stock? What do you define convenience by? Free shipping and returns was the number one convenience by far. Home delivery, pickup, same day delivery, also very important. In stock was the third. We saw a big drop in location, it dropped by about 25% because now it doesn't matter if the store is closed or not, you're gonna order it and have it delivered to you and that becomes less of an issue for you. Ratings and reviews. Ratings and reviews are incredibly important in our industry because really, the way our industry has evolved has been more about, I'm gonna buy something, like I'm gonna buy a KitchenAid blender. And if it really performs, I'm gonna go and invest in the stand mixer. But we've really sort of outsourced our opinions, our experiences to other people. We read ratings and reviews and make decisions on items that we would never normally before have bought without trying them ourselves. First, because we can return them more easily. So we said, when purchasing home or housewares products, how important are ratings and reviews? Interestingly, Extremely went up by 22% this time. It was only 26% last time. Now it's up at 33. Very important also went up. It was 38.6. Now it's up at 39. But in the end of it, we said, which ratings and reviews mean the most to you? User ratings and reviews or expert reviews? User ratings and reviews, and especially if they're attached to a video, have a much higher value, but expert reviews grew by 27%. So it's always that fluctuating, do we trust other users or do we trust the algorithms that are creating some of these reviews or distributing them, or do we want to hear from experts when we read in the Times, like Wirecutter, or things where there's so many people now putting out reviews from reliable sources that we really have to look at experts very more closely. Lifestyle benefits. Lifestyle benefits were kind of vague, and so we took a little extra time in describing them. But it's when you buy a product, and it delivers more than its function. So if you're maybe buying a slow cooker, or you may be buying an organization product because you know that it gives you a sense of well-being, things like that. So we said, how important are lifestyle benefits and which are important? Savings of time over other activities was number one at 52%. So save me time. We always say, save me time, save me space, save me money. In that order has been consistently the consumer hue and cry when it comes to a better product. Cultivating new skills was a real surprise at 39%. It's up 20% from last year. And that's like, teach me how to do new things. It's interesting. Adobe put out an article that was called the flexible human being. And their idea behind it was that we are more than one person, that we don't live in a linear way. We don't go to high school and say, I'm going to be a lawyer someday. We decide as we go, and then when we reach whatever that goal is, we find another one. So we're constantly reinventing ourselves, and socially we are expected to reinvent ourselves. We're expected to post new things about what we did and what we accomplished. So it's interesting to see cultivating new skills jump up like that. Promoting physical wellness was 46, now it's 34. It actually dropped. So that's interesting that it's taken, that some of the space has been taken away with that. The others are pretty much stable, except the creating opportunities on social media went up 80%. So we're seeing more of that, and that runs with cultivating new skills. the value of shopper experience. So we said, how do people feel about home and housewares online versus in store? We gave them a range of about 15 different things. We're just showing you the top four. The number one was what matters most was variety of price points when they're shopping online. Number two was they wanted a broad range of quality options. Number three was they wanted a broad range of products in general. And number four was they wanted a broad range of recognizable brands. So where we saw the shifts here was we saw growth in they wanted more recognizable brands by about 10%. And they also wanted even more products to choose from. The what was interesting was that they didn't want any more price points. They wanted less price points and more products, more choices within the price points that they were buying in. When we look at in-store, variety of price points was number one. And broad range of quality options was number three. Broad range of products to choose from was number two. And then number four was they wanted a broad range of recognizable brands. What was interesting here was that the quality options went down by 26%. So it speaks to exactly what we saw before. People, when they're shopping online, when they're shopping in store, they want less options in terms of quality. They don't want, and the preference was for better quality. Responsibility. This is one that's growing in importance as we talk more about environmental, social, and governance. So the value of responsibility, we ask people, when deciding to purchase from a retailer or brand, how important to you is their position on social responsibility? The number one was somewhat important, but what's interesting is very to extremely, when you add those two up, you're sitting at 50. It's close. So you're sitting at 50% say it's very to extremely important, and the shift was what really counts. So extremely was at 12.5%, and now it's 22. It went up 76% in 1 year. That's a big shift. So, and then we look at very was 23.6, now it's 28. That went up 18%. So between those two, you're seeing a big shift towards very to extremely. And a lot of it is about now they have those options. They have more and more options. One of the things that we've been talking about with the Insight Group is that every vendor you're going to see on that floor, I'd say 90% of them have some statement on either social or environmental responsibility and how you can serve it through their product. So then we said, when deciding to purchase from a retailer or a brand, how important is their position on environmental responsibility? Again, you're sitting up at, now you're sitting at 58%, say very to extremely. Extremely important went up 33%. It was at 19%, now it's at 25. Very important went up 29%. It was at 25 and now it's at 33. Not important, dropped by 28%. So again, you're seeing that shift. More and more people, it's easier now without paying more to make responsible decisions. And so that's what they're doing. So this takes everything that we've talked about and it lines it up. And it would have been very easy to take this and to say, okay, you know, here's the highest, here's the lowest. But I left it like this because the message we want to send is that all of these, the consumer value equation is very nuanced now. And so all of these, you have highs and lows, and certainly quality is number one, really, really important. Pricing and promotions went from number five to number three because of the economy, rather number two. Ratings and reviews at number three. I mean, those are really important things, but don't forget, these are all, think of it as a checklist. The more of these that you can satisfy, the more boxes you can check off when you create a product, when you create a program, when you create a service program, the more of them you can check off, the closer you are to the till. You know, I mean, it's every one of them matters. It used to be a very simple equation. It was about price, it was about quality, and that was pretty much it. So, you know, when you're looking at something where environmental responsibility means more than lifestyle benefits, you know, and it's like just right alongside brand value and right alongside convenience, you're talking about something really important. So don't look at it and say, oh, well, that's the lowest one, I'm gonna cut that off. Each one of these is important to the consumer. We wanted to wrap with this, which is just an understanding that what drives business and consumer demands has changed a lot. So it's gone from a position of demographics where we're looking at age and incomes and things like that, to psychographics where we're really looking at interests, passions, those intangibles. A lot of the parts of this value equation are not something you can put on a box or in a box. It's important to remember that. You know, you can, and also a lot of it is built by other people. A reputation for quality is not something you can build yourself anymore. It's what other people say about you. We've moved from caring about me and my family to caring about me and my family and society. We've moved from just delivering product to delivering shareable experiences, not just experiences, but shareable ones. And there's, you know, sharing, we very look at this as a bifurcated thing. There's sharing on social media, but there's in real life sharing. IRL sharing is just as important right now, especially post-pandemic. We've went from the life that the consumer lives to delivering the person the consumer wants to be. So it's not just about the outward stuff. It's really right now more, and you're seeing it in a lot of these things, more about the inward person that you want to help them become. It went from retailers and big brands dominating to shopping whenever and wherever. And it's great because it's helped a lot of small brands survive and thrive. And it also speaks to all of your ability to develop new brands in-house, to do private label, and to create assortments that are truly unique. It went from brand size being important to brand relevance being important. So we see a lot of small brands that really are meaningful and that really are just relevant to the way we live now. And finally, we went from an era of industrial consumption to a digital era of considered consumption. So it's, what am I buying? I'm a boomer, so we were like, whoever dies with the most things wins. And now we're like trying to get rid of them all. But this idea of really considered consumption and where your money's going. Today's consumer, they don't want to own, they want to become. They're not about just how much can I own. And also, they don't want brands to say, we get you. They want brands to say, we are you. So it's important to walk around. And if you're a store, you're a brand. You know, so that's kind of where we are. And that's kind of where we wrap up. Does anybody have any questions? The expanse of this is broad, so if any of you want to meet and talk about the delineation of age or things like that, we're happy to do it. And also just keep in mind, as Mike said, you're going to be getting it. There will be an audio recording. You'll also be able to get the deck, because I know a lot of this is very thick. It's hard to sort of wrap your heads around.
I actually want to ask a question. Went through a lot of stuff, and it's good that people can go back and reacquaint themselves. What would you like people to walk away from this with? I mean, what's the starting point to kind of take this, potentially go through the material again online, and then turn it into actionable actions that you're going to bring to your business?
You know, I think it's a really good question. Nobody's asked me that before, but my first answer is, if you're assorting a store or if you're developing a product line, it doesn't matter. If you take this list and really ask yourself before you add another item, before you add another SKU to your store, before you create something, make sure that you deal with the intangibles. Save me time, save me space, save me money, and make sure that you are addressing the top things, quality. It's like we have gone so long just talking about price, right? And it's still a consideration. You know, you saw price is number two. But one of the things when you dig in a little deeper, you see multiple functions. Multifunction is up about almost 20% in terms of its driving possibilities. So really, take the list to product development and say, where do we stand here? And before you bring in a new product, say, is this delivering on quality? Is this what I want to be about? You know, is this, treat it like a checkbox. And the more boxes you can check, the more that product belongs in your assortment or in your on your shelf. Hey, Peter. Peter doesn't need a mic.
do you find that most people make the mistake of not really knowing what they want their brand ethos to be before they assess how to meet those value equation components?
Yeah, Dawn and I were just talking about that. I think the biggest problem, and I know it sounds ridiculous, but it's especially a problem with independents, is that a lot of stores that could be amazing, and you all have one of these stores on your main street. You go in and you're like, pick a lane. You know, a lot of stores buy either something for everybody or they buy things that they like. So always question, are you buying for you are you buying for, like, I live in a neighborhood that is a very specific sort of age group, and they have this number of kids, and you know, and you go into a store and you can see they've bought what they love, what they really believe in, but it's not who's buying it. You know, so I think that's, there are areas where fashion relevance and color and style are going to be more. You've got to be there. You've got to know that if you're going to. And there are areas where quality and durability are going to be the most important to that area. So it's not just about regional assortments. It's about, I mean, it really is about looking at, and it's also about who you want to be. You know, we always say people buy for who they've got and who they want to keep, but are you buying for who you want to attract? You know, some of the real growth brands that we've seen, some of the independents, the cookware brands who have gone direct to consumer, they got into that business because big brands were not listening to what the consumer wanted multi-piece sets. So it's like you've got people like our place, or our house, going in and doing a, you know, and now Brevanche is doing cookware in like a 7-piece set in one box. And it's, you know, people wanted. So it listen. You know, I mean, we started with the title of it was Learning to Listen. And that's really what it goes back to. Listen to consumers. You know, it's not rocket science. It's not, but it is a science, you know.
Any other questions? Well, I will ask one more, because something you just brought up kind of stuck. Is it? Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, I am sorry.
Thank you. I found the social standing for something really interesting, that's increasing in importance to consumers. I also think about this past year, and we've seen some retailers and brands having pushback or having to make adjustments off of those kinds of things. And I would be really interested, because that data just showed that's becoming more important to consumers, but what direction and importance is that going? Does that make sense?
You know, I think I know what you're talking about, although you're being nice and not naming it. But I think it's a powder keg. You have to look at something and say, can this be made into a powder keg? You know, I mean, when you look at, you know, Anheuser-Busch, or whoever that was, you know, that's not your crowd. You know, you're being somebody who is not endemic to who your brand appeals to right now, and also you're offending them, and you're trying to gain a market share that's like this. So, you know, it's a part of it is really looking at who do you have right now. Now, there are businesses who have said, you know, there's business leadership who takes a stand on what they believe in. And it's becoming more and more expected that you will take a position on certain things. But it doesn't have to be everything. You know, it can be, there are certain companies that it's safer to them to choose something social that is, like, there are companies who really work hard and try to do more global issues. But their customer is more concerned about domestic issues. There's nothing wrong with asking the people who you have what they care about. You know, we went for years of doing water bottle companies and them doing all these, you know, give 2% back to, you know, one for water for the planet and all this. And then when we surveyed them, we found out that they really cared more about wildlife. So, but we love that connection with water so much that we had to keep pushing that button. So really just ask. I mean, it's such a simple question. We want to help people. We want to help. How can we care? How can we be better?
Somebody else have a question? On the way.
Really appreciated your presentation. I was questioning or wondering whether this is the largest year-over-year change that you've seen, and have you seen other?
I'm really glad you asked that. It's the broadest change that we've seen. Seriously, this is the fourth year. For the Value Equation Index, and we have never seen changes like this. But what's interesting is the changes that we're seeing are almost fundamental in a way. They're changes that don't seem politically driven. They don't even seem price driven. They're changes that are based in certain macro trends of finance. We know things are not going to get easier, and for for generations like Z and younger millennials who are coming into their own financially. They're scared, you know. So the things that you're seeing about durability and reliability and long-term function, those are increasing, but not because it's like a perfect storm of the environment, and a lot of that got put on hold. A lot of things got put on hold when the pandemic hit. We stopped caring. It was like, okay, we'll care about the environment when we're sure we're going to be a part of it, you know? And so now we're really seeing, this is one way that you can really see that the dust is settling, because the dust is settling around our lives a bit, so we feel comfortable making some of these choices and seeing some. But yeah, this is a big year for shifts, I got to tell you. We haven't seen anything like this, so.
Dawn, can you come up for a moment, please?
Uh-oh, you're in trouble.
Hi, everyone. You may know I'm Peter Giannetti, and I am the editor-in-chief of Homepage News. And Homepage News was pleased to work very closely with Tom and with Dawn Evans, who's the director of marketing for International Housewares Association, to develop what we called Insight last year. You mentioned Insight at some point during the presentation. So this self-promotional moment is brought to you by me. Tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock in this room, Tom, Dawn, and I are going to give you a preview of the forthcoming Insight Trend Guide, Trend Index, I should call it, from Homepage News in collaboration with Springboard and with IHA. So we hope you can make it. And if you can't, be on the lookout on homepagenews.com as we get into the spring and summer. You'll start seeing our next generation of what we think is the industry's most comprehensive kind of blueprint, if you will, style guidance, trend guidance, that is, and we hope we can see you tomorrow. So thank you, Tom, very much.
Pleasure.
Thank you, Dawn, very
Thanks,
much.
Everybody.
And Mike, thank you.